Welcome to Season 5 of Game Design Unboxed on the No Direction Network. Danielle Reynolds talks to tabletop game designers about the games they've made. Together, they unbox how the game went from inspiration to publication.
This season is proudly sponsored by Allplay. If you've been following my social media, aka Token Gay Mer, you'll see that my Allplay gaming table gets used on the daily when I'm not flying to different conventions. Between hosting meals on it as a dining room table or removing the panels and adding the cup holders for a Friday night game night as a board gaming table, it gets used constantly. It's also perfect for being a working station for me building my ridiculous amount of prototypes. It honestly gets used more than I ever would have expected. Not to mention, it's great for hiding games and their pieces from my cats. Sans is my little box sitter, while Nova tries to steal the dice as Banshee watches from high atop the cat tower. I've caught them attempting to take dice from Allplay's Sequoia and Mountain Goats, two of my favorite Allplay games that my non-gamer friends adore. We play a lot of party games, and these two, they don't mind me taking out instead. So check out Allplay's tables, bags, playmats, and board games at allplay.com. Thank you for joining me, Danielle, for Game Design Unboxed, Inspiration to Publication, episode 105, Omicron Protocol. Today, we are joined by co-designers Bernie Lynn and Brendan Kendricks. They are both co-owners of Dead Alive Games, as well as co-designers of the game that we are talking about right now. Before we start, I've also been told that one is an emperor god, so I would love to know how an emperor god got into designing board games.
I'd like to correct you. I'm god emperor.
Oh, my bad. That's true. I would say god should probably come first in the title sequence. Yeah.
So how did I get into game design? That one's actually a good one for Brendan to answer because I like to say he tricked me into it.
Yeah. He was tricked by a cruel imp. Me. That's my title.
Gotcha. So you trick God. Love that.
Yeah. I'm like an ineffectual Loki. So I'm only tricky. Not powerful. But yeah, how did that start? So I like to say that we kind of played a lot of co-op games during the summer, kind of before we decided to start on this game. Without throwing any stones, there was a game that I got that I didn't love. And so I started doing some house rules. One thing led to another. We were really playing a lot of like skirmish miniatures games together, in particular Guild Ball, which is really great. At some point, we were playing all these co-op games, and the idea of a skirmish miniatures game with a third party just kind of popped into my head. And I was like, I don't think that's been done. And so I called Bernie, and the rest is history. My cruel trick.
I should have said no.
Regrets were made that day.
Exactly. Yep.
I told him I'm never saying yes again.
Okay, so why'd you say yes? What was the pitch? What was the trick?
I mean, I've been playing games for a long time, whether it's video games or board games, even before like the golden age in the 2000s. So the idea of creating a game kind of never entered my mind before that. And I think it was just like the right time. I was like, hey, we definitely wanted to improve upon this game and did a bunch of house rules. And we're like, hey, let's just give it a try. And I think just one thing led to another. I was like, hey, this is actually really fun. And it's a good outlet for kind of creative energy. So I just continued with it.
That's so cool. Did you just like make a whole new game at the end of this?
No. The game that was the source of our sort of the house rules was a game that we quickly abandoned. But it was a co-op game with some kind of like fighting of enemies in it. That idea, plus a lot of the skirmish miniatures stuff that we really loved. So we kind of drew inspiration from minis games that we both loved and played, but with that co-op kind of aspect.
I think also one of the things like we complain about like games a lot sometimes, like, this rule should have been that and that. So it's one of those, finally you get a chance to change everything to how you exactly want it. Not to say if it'll be good or not, but ultimately it was fun to see if we could make a game that kind of anything we don't like, we could fix, and also kind of just have our vision of this world that we're imagining up for the game.
And so was that the initial inspiration for like Omicron Protocol?
Yeah, now ultimately we kind of wanted to, we went a little hipster for this game, and we really wanted to get a theme that wasn't as used in the miniatures game world, which is usually like high fantasy, super cyberpunk, far future ones, or a lot of monsters. So we're like, what if we just did something that everyone can relate to? It reflects our environment, our society, and we just like forward it a few decades and make something that's kind of believable and people want to like put themselves into that kind of world. Original idea that started this and created the lore of Omicron Protocol.
Well, yeah, I know on your website, it is called an intra-apocalyptic cyberpunk theme. Please explain intra-apocalyptic. What do we mean by that? How is that relatable?
Yeah, a lot of games are post-apocalyptic. So we came up with the word intra-apocalyptic because the apocalypse is still happening. The people in the city are kind of stuck in there. They don't know if the rest of the world has ended or not, but they just know that what they know of the city and their life is definitely in jeopardy, and they just need to get out to see if there's safety and sanity outside of the city. So that's why we call it intra-apocalyptic. It was something that we haven't seen before out there. Generally, things already went to crap and people are just trying to survive. But here, there's hope is kind of a big theme of this, the story of this game, that if only we can work together and get out, things will be better.
Very cool. So then how do you play the game for anyone who hasn't played?
It's set up much like a lot of skirmish games. So each player will take a team, a squad, we call it, of unique characters. So you have really, really deep and interesting unique characters with, and we have lots of ways that we make them unique, but mostly including like stats, how they attack or how powerful they are or how fast they can move, or how good they are at interacting with game objectives. Those are some of the dimensions that we tweak, you know, and then lots of cool special abilities. So these people really are full of life. So you get this squad and you assemble the squad based on the objective of the current scenario that you're playing. And then you just alternate turns and kind of move your characters, have them act and set up and try to solve the scenario.
And one thing we might not have mentioned, we kind of mentioned how we were inspired by these co-op games, but it's actually also a competitive game. So there are multiple modes in the game. So you could either play it as a co-op game. So each of us can control a character almost like playing D&D and figuring out the scenario and getting the goals of the scenario. Or we could play it versus kind of like the Warhammers or the even Guild Ball, which was another inspiration. So the goal ultimately was to get more people into miniatures, tactical miniatures games, because it is intimidating when you just walk into like a miniatures night at a game store and see like hundreds of models perfectly painted and all these people are just saying jargon that like you have no clue what's talking about. And you have to go with like rulers and terrain and all that stuff. But we're just like, what if we made a game that's like a board game? Everything's in there. You open it, you could play it. It's based on hexes, so you don't need any measuring tools. Everything you need is there. And if you don't want to play competitively to learn the rules, let's play together. And the rules are pretty much 95% the same. So that was the ultimate goal of Omicron Protocol.
I think that's an awesome goal because I personally have maybe played one or two skirmish games in my time of being a gamer because miniatures is expensive. It's also quite intimidating for me.
Mm-hmm.
That was another goal, right? Make it cheap. I mean, you know, you don't have to spend $1,000 to get into this game. It's whatever our core set is now, $110 is the MSRP. So compared to like
getting one vehicle for $100.
It's pretty cheap. And it's also worth emphasizing, like what Bernie said is fully true. In fact, about co-op versus competitive, we went all the way to our first Kickstarter without any co-op. Like it was a fully competitive game until we developed and it really clicked and fell into place, luckily. But it was a competitive skirmish game for a long time.
Interesting. Do you find that more people play the co-op or the competitive version?
These days, I think we demo co-op a lot, but I think people play competitive more. That's my suspicion. I don't know that because there's a lot of games out there.
Yeah, we've noticed that a lot of times, even when competitive miniatures gamers come as a group, they ask to play co-op probably because it's easy to learn together.
Oh, that totally makes sense. So when you were creating the game, you had to come up with like the different factions that are fighting or working together or whatever. How did you come up with those?
I think at first we started with this sort of the two that are in the core box. So there's kind of the Doomsday Preppers, the survivalists we call them. And they're like you know, they're an oddball collection of characters that are ready and also a little bit low tech as far as cybernetically enhanced goes. And then we have the military grade encryption police military faction. So I guess those were our first two kind of like, okay, well, these guys probably survived, right? Are ready to take action. But we really started with like, mechanically, we want this role. Like, okay, here's a guy who can do melee really well. And here's a person who can go sneak around or run fast and get objectives. And then, here, you know, so we had these sort of archetypes in mind. And actually, one of my favorite sort of pivotal moments was a few months into design, where we really sat down and like gave people names. And then it was like, oh my God, this is cool. So up to a point, it was like really mechanical and interesting enough.
I'd say also kind of in most miniatures games, or actually in any game when there's asymmetric powers, whether it's a Euro board game or even a miniatures game, it's really hard to perfectly balance something, especially when you let people choose. So as Brendan said before, you choose a squad of 2 to 4 of these characters we created and bring them on a mission, right? It's impossible to kind of balance for every combination of that. And one of the things we kind of thought about is just like archetypes, because most missions are something related to like, you know, picking up something, delivering it, or go get something before the other person does, or protect some person. We just made sure that there are people who are really good at the objective, like whether it's sneaking around protecting, there are people who are good at eliminating the opponent's threat, so the fighters. And then because this game is also somewhat unique in that there is a third party enemy in there that is the enemy of both players if you're playing competitively, and they're kind of the cyber zombies, as we call them. You have another archetype of people who can clear those people, like just nullify them so that you could keep on doing stuff. Because in the game, the more awesome stuff you do, the more like electromagnetic noise you create, and therefore that attracts them and more of them show up.
So then how do you win or lose the game?
If you're playing co-op, your goal is to score a certain amount of points depending on the difficulty level in a certain amount of rounds. If you're playing competitively, there are ways to score points based on those three archetypes we talked about. Doing the objective, knocking your opponents out, or clearing the city of these cyber zombies.
Okay. And then how are you moving around like the map or board?
Yeah, it's a hex board, and each character has a certain number of hexes that they can move. There's a little flexibility in there, but basically they have a speed that they can go.
Gotcha. So is it more like an action point system?
Definitely action points. But it's cool because it's a split pool. So you have, you know, depending on how many characters you're playing, you could have 5 to 8 action points to split between your different characters. So some characters may have kind of a light turn and others may have a really cool, powerful turn.
Yeah, so it's not fixed.
Yeah, it's what needs to happen, right?
Oh, that's so cool. So then when you were working on the game, how did you go about playtesting and developing?
The good news with that is there were two of us, and originally it was designed as a skirmish game for 2 players. So we pretty much met up like 5 times a week and just played.
We tested so much. Yeah.
This is like our most tested games.
Basically became roommates.
Yeah, pretty much.
My wife calls Bernie my game wife.
Oh, I love that. That's so cute.
Yeah. So, and then of course we kind of hit the convention tour and went to every local or major convention there is, and usually set up events or join the Unpub or the Proto Spiel and just try to get people to play.
When you were finding playtesters, was the goal to like get people that were into board games or into miniatures, or was it just anyone who was like, oh, that looks cool?
Yes. Please play.
Yeah. Just yes.
Yeah, that brings up a funny story. So we try to get everyone to play, especially once we started adding the co-op. We really wanted to make this game as accessible as possible. We joined, I don't know if you know, at Gen Con, they have this First Exposure Playtest Hall. So they're awesome. And we went there, and it's mainly for board games and RPGs. So we're like one of the only miniatures games. So yeah, every session, I mean, I'm still amazed at what Vinny and Avi can do. Like in 15 minutes, they seat every table with playtesters. And we just thought, like, okay, there's no way they could find people to play a miniatures game when most of the people coming into this thing is like here for board games or RPGs. But they consistently were able to find people who like never played a miniature game before. And we were able to teach the game to them and they would actually play. And at first there are a couple groups where like the attitude in the beginning was like, you could see a friend was just dragged in by someone else and she did not want to play the game at all. But at the end, it was just like, she was into it. She was like, oh, you should do this and that. And like, they were just like calculating. So that was definitely kind of one of the few moments where we're like, okay, I think we have something.
That's always a good feeling. Also, just like having those opportunities between like Unpub or the First Exposure or any of those other conventions. So nice.
So great. Yeah.
Yeah. Did you have any like large development changes while you're working on it besides adding the co-op?
Yeah. I mean, there were, so the whole, the third party thing really started. I mean, we started with rulers, you know, and chucking dice, and then we went to hex movement. But during the ruler phase, we were just like, I don't know how these Sims should show up. That's the name of the third party enemy. So we were like, we called it quadrant spawn. So they would kind of like, we just divided up the board, you know, it was just such a mess, man. And that was definitely the hardest part of the game, I think, was really finally coming to a point where we're like, okay, there's all this, you know, it's been a year and we've been just kind of saying, well, whatever, punting on this. How are these enemies going to move and act? We just spent like a month. I mean, I think that was probably as close as we've ever gotten to just being like, forget it. Cause it was super painful. we got there.
And did you always plan to self-publish or were you pitching the game?
We never pitched it. No.
Yeah, we were always self-publishing. One of the, at least in the Bay Area, we have some really good proto-spiel events at local cons. And one of the panels they had that was super helpful, and it included like pretty big designers like Luke Laurie and Johnny Patkin. And they were just like, self-publish or pitch. And pretty much they summed it up really well there. They're just like, if you're pitching it, you're a designer. And you design mechanics because the publishers could retheme and change everything they want. And you have no control over it, but you just know that your mechanics survive. If you want to self-publish, you get to keep all of your like a creative vision, but you are running a business. You're no longer just a designer. So that is like the key decision you want to make. Of course, at that time, we didn't fully comprehend what running a business is like. But we just knew we have a creative vision and we don't want anyone to change it. So we're going to self-publish. And then 7 years later.
Wow. That was 7 years later from like the initial idea to being printed or from that panel?
To now, yeah. So.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, I'm like, wow, that was quite a while for your inspiration publication. Damn.
It's about, by the time it got out, 3 or 3 to 4 years.
That's not terrible.
Yeah, not bad at all.
How did you decide on your company name then?
The movie Dead Alive. So in the beginning, we were kind of, you know, it's zombies, right? Cyber zombies. And so a company, a startup is dead or alive, right?
We don't know if this is going to work out. Nice.
Bernie, what's your take on that one?
Yeah. I mean, one of the other choices was B&B games. So I think Dead Alive sounds better.
And then there was like, we went to Gen Con that year and we're like, oh, there is already a B&B game.
Yeah, so we actually found another BB games or something. They're like, oh, that was close. And for a few years, like in terms of search engine, people still call us Dead or Alive games, like the video game series.
Dead or Alive, Dead or Alive's famous game, Omnicron Protocol.
Omnicron Protocol, but Dead or Alive games.
Exactly. It's so close. That's so funny. That reminds me so I graduated high school and I had a bunch of honors and my principal was like doing the whole saying people's names as you're graduating. And yeah, messed up my name. So, but like butchered it so bad. And thankfully this was like the award ceremony, not the actual graduation cap and gown, but call me Daniel Rentals.
Wow.
And so for the last week of school, people asked if they could rent me out for sexual favors or parties because it's high school.
Oh my
and
God.
I was like, are you kidding me? It's so funny because it's like going to this great school, achieved all these things, over 4.0, Daniel Rentals. And I'm like, are you fucking? I like stopped. I was like, wait, is that supposed to be me? But it was going in order, so it had to be me.
Oh, my gosh. That is terrible.
Yeah. It's not great. Kids are mean. Yeah. I just skip Arizona and go to the Chicago area. It was so bad. Nice. You know, at least you guys are doing better than that.
Yeah. For us, it's just like one or two letters.
And also very much like it's almost mean what we did in terms of like, oh, no, no, sorry, it's dead alive. Like, oh, it's not dead or alive. Like, no, we took the thing that you're used to saying and we took the word out. Sorry. So, yeah,
it's a Loki inside you. I get it.
Exactly. There you go.
So then when you decided to self-publish, you went with the crowdfunding area. So what was the decision for that?
Kickstarter. It's all we knew. I mean, I guess we looked at Indiegogo and we're like, nope, nobody does games there.
Yeah, at that point it was just Kickstarter. We did a lot of research on previous miniatures games that kickstarted. And I think kind of the mid-20 teens was still like the golden age of Kickstarter. And we're like, oh, okay, that's kind of how you do it. Read a lot of Jamie Stegmeier and James Matthey's blogs to kind of prepare ourselves. And yeah, I think that was all there was back then.
Rest in peace, James Matthey. He was awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, I literally learned about the hobby game, just games in general that weren't like Monopoly and things in 2018 and started designing in like 2019. And I think that was around the time that he passed away. And I remember like just getting into the Facebook groups and everyone being like, this person, legend, passed away. And I was like, I feel so bad. I don't know who this is. And then I found out who he was. And I was like, oh, man.
No, we were lucky that we interacted with him a little bit here and there. It was really helpful.
Yeah, I mean, Jamie Stegmeier's crowdfunding stuff has been awesome. I made that one mistake. I shouldn't say mistake because it worked out for you guys. But as a new designer, I tried to also self-publish and run a Kickstarter. But I did it for a game that should not have been on Kickstarter. So I pulled it.
Also alone. Amazing.
Oh, yeah. I would not recommend.
We pretty much tell every new designer who wants to self-publish these days, like, just do a card game and don't do it alone.
Yeah, how did you go about creating the miniatures?
How did we do? God, I don't even know. That science seems like a miracle. We got lucky, man. We found this guy, I think. How did we find him even? Was that through Upwork?
I think it was through Upwork.
Yeah, but we ended up kind of connecting outside of there. He's just awesome.
He's a great sculptor. He sculpts actually kind of as a freelance for a lot of the minis and board game miniatures that you've probably seen out there. Does amazing work and just a great guy, and we kind of just went with him. Like, looking back now, I don't know if I would do this again with all the knowledge we have now.
Super ambitious, yeah. Just totally crazy. Yeah, I'm glad we did it. But we shouldn't have done it.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I love how I always ask people, like, what's advice you should give designers? You're like, oh, if you're new, just like card game. Don't do this mini game.
Don't do it. Don't do what we did.
Have a partner or two or more.
Yeah, do a card game. It took us 4 games to get there.
Oh, so now you feel like you're in the rhythm.
We learned so much is the thing. And also, like, you know, the work that we put into that, like, won us the respect of Steve Skippy Brown, who we signed for his first game. You know what I mean? So it's like, it's good work that we did. It just cost us something. That's all.
It's nice to be recognized when people actually play it and go like, oh, this is good. And we're like, yeah, we spent a lot of time on it. And it does make every other game a lot easier to make.
Oh, I'm sure when you're comparing them.
Yeah, like when we finally got to the current game, Lunar Skyline, it was just like, oh, wow, we did this in a few months.
And we're just kicking back on the Kickstarter, like, well.
Yeah, in the past, it was like, we would just not be able to sleep the night before Kickstarter, and every day, every second we're looking at it. And now just like, oh, this last one was so easy.
So what would you say was your like favorite and your least favorite experience of this whole process?
I think we probably have the same least favorite.
Yeah. Probably the night. So, okay. We brilliantly decided we're going to launch our first Kickstarter during a local game convention and then just booked ourselves solid with demos. And so, you know, I don't know, at the end of our first, you know, 14-hour day at this convention, we're like, it's sinking in that like this isn't funding. You know, we're not going to make it. That was that was a bad night.
A lot of people in the industry kind of like will be like, oh yeah, relaunching's not a bad thing. You'll get a lot of the people back. People actually saw that you tried launching it. So it was a lot of therapy. But I would say on the good side, I mean, there are two stories that are super, like made me feel like it was worth it. One of the things with this game, again, we wanted to design a world kind of in our vision, something that represented what we believed in. One of the factions, the third faction, is a gang, a triad, and it's pretty much led by an Asian lady, like a super slumlord, crime lord, but super intelligent and just consolidated power in the whole city because the city is shut down and law enforcement mostly evacuated. And then all of her lieutenants were like women in there. So like that was one of like something like, oh, this would be awesome to have a faction like that. And then at, I think it was either the same convention or two different conventions, we had one guy come up with me to me and he's like, I love this faction because they're mostly Asians and I never see Asians in miniatures games. And then another one was a lady who there's she's actually in our one of the cover art for expansions fighting a cyber bear. So badass, like drunken fist, tall, super strong lady. And this one lady came and she's like, I just love kind of how you represent different body types and different styles and all that. And it's not just like what you see in miniatures games, like all men look like this, all women look like that. So I think those two memories still stick with me and just made me go, okay, self-publishing and not letting anyone change our vision was probably worth it.
No, I think that's great. That's like one of the complaints I have a lot of times. I'm just like, because my body type is, I'm not skinny. I'm not super muscular. I don't have like curves. I'm just kind of a plank sometimes, and if I eat too much I'm a potato, so like I have to work out a lot to have any kind of curvage, muscular, whatever. And so it's like I don't see myself in games. It's normally girls that are like very curvy or like quite big chested or like a nice butt, and I'm just like hi, I'm here. Thanks for including a woman, but like could you make her a tad less sexy and naked, please? We like clothing. We like to be warm in the winter.
Yeah, we deliberately made choices about that for sure. Just speaking to that same faction, I think our only really sexy mini is Lady Rose, the leader of that faction. And it was very deliberate, like, this is her style. And she's not over the top. It's not super busty or anything like that, but she's just wearing kind of a...
She's just like a boss ass bitch.
Yeah, you know, yeah.
Like, you look at her, you wouldn't think she controls all of the city's crime syndicate.
Just a side gig.
Yeah, and to be fair, she's just showing some leg. It's not a, you know, it's not over the top.
Hey, legs are my favorite. Just kidding.
Hey, legs are good.
Yeah, don't and it's wrong. A traditional Chinese dress. Uh-huh. Please don't sexualize it.
Yes.
No, I think that's great that you guys are intentional about that, because I know that that stuff is noticed and it's so appreciated. Like when I found games that were older, I'd be like, oh, is there a girl to play? No. Okay. Is there a not white guy? Nope. Okay. That guy's got blue eyes like me. I guess I'll choose him. like, I don't know, where now it's gotten so much better. So that's awesome to hear.
Yeah, we actually have a character. I mean, we created the story, the art, and it's in the storybook and everything, but we don't have the faction and minis and playable rules yet. But we decided, we're like, okay, all the miniature games have these sexy chick characters. We're going to make a sexy male. miniature, and he's gonna wear almost nothing.
Beautiful.
And the story in there is like he's this cosplay guy, and he made this technology that has these invisible force fields, but for some reason, like everyone who shoots bullets or what throws something at him, like it always just somehow hits the armor, which is barely anything.
Like a soccer cup.
And that's kind of the joke. Yeah. It's like somehow it always hits the armor.
Oh, that's awesome. Oh, man. Yeah. Tell me more about the storybook that you guys got for the game and the lore.
Yeah, it's like 300 some pages.
Ooh, geez. Okay.
Yep, we went in.
We spent. We went deep. It's a novel. Mm-hmm. It's 120,000 words.
Yeah. So it contains the whole, basically the whole kind of first arc of our story, including introducing every character, including the two factions that we haven't released yet. So yeah, it's quite a bit of stuff in there. And so each of those individual like introduction stories kind of fits into the grand scheme. Somehow or another. So
yeah, like a lot of the game scenarios are based on that, and sometimes whenever we want to create new scenarios, we could actually just look at the story and create something from it.
No, that's so cool. And do you have any other games that fans should be looking out for coming from Dead Alive games?
Yeah, tons. Look out, we're coming. No, so we have our second game, Lunar Rush, very well received. It's a Euro game, but it's got the Dice Tower Seal of Excellence. I mean, it's a really, really nice kind of simultaneous play, midway Euro. We're doing an expansion for that soonish, so that's going to be really exciting.
Third one is this game that we kickstarted in May and just delivered 5 months later. It's a cyber pet quest, cybernetic pets trying to save their owners. This is the one you saw at Essen. So that's the one that just came out. And in the same world as Omicron Protocol, in fact, the mechanical cat actually is a character playable in Omicron Protocol. So this is her story. And then finally, the current Kickstarter that we're just doing is designed by Charlie McCarran. And it's a trick-taking game with double suits. So that one hopefully will get out by early next year.
That's awesome. You guys are definitely staying busy. It's also interesting to see how you started like chunky game and then now we got this little trick taker.
Yeah, I like to put each of the boxes of our games together at conventions just to show people it just keeps shrinking.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny. You like kind of learned my lesson, but also making expansions. So there's that.
In 5 years, we'll be making like Pogs. Yeah, it's just a single disc. That's the game. Yeah.
Done. Ship it. Everyone will want it.
Just add cats on it.
Honestly, though, that is really all it takes.
Yeah, our good friend Tate Wu, we sell all his stuff and at our conventions, and he has the cutest cat games and cat enamel pins. And at one point, at one of the conventions, it was kind of sad because I think his enamel pins outsold all of our games combined.
Totally. Yeah. To be fair, that was PAX, and we only had Omicron Protocol, so it was...
Oh, they're pretty heavy on the pins there.
They love their pins.
Heavy yeah. Pins, not minis. So
it was a little demoralizing.
But we made some money.
I know. We started joking. You should make up a game name and like spend some time on the art and say, like, this game's coming soon, and then just make super cute enamel pins to sell for that game.
I mean, that's, yeah, I'm pretty sure people do that. We have a game that is going to be at PAX Unplugged, which when this airs will be around the time that this is airing. But the game, because of shipping shenanigans and other things, will not be available to buy, so just pre-order, so we will have it there. But also, we will have the pin, and it's cute because it's a cat packing in a suitcase, pack the essentials, so, you know, there's that.
That's going to sell out.
Sure it'll do, yeah. It'll do good. It's pretty cute. I'm a fan. I helped develop it and project manage it, so I'm pumped. It's also a first-time designer, so I love, like, seeing a first-time designer get to, like, see their actual product and people playing it. It's just such a cool feeling to, like, watch. Pack the essentials. It's about packing cats into suitcases.
I've seen the picture. I've seen it.
You probably saw it at the Wise Wizard booth for, like, Wacky Wizard games. It's the third one coming out. Well, I do wonder, from all the advice that you have shared, is there any other pieces of advice that you would share to potential designers or like earlier designers in their career?
Boy, what would I say to designers is listen, just listen, because people are right, even when they're wrong. So if people are giving you feedback, they may not be right in what they're suggesting, but they're usually right about something feeling uncomfortable or a little bit weird. So sometimes you just gotta, you know, kill something you love. And maybe that's a mechanic that you're just used to, but it's tough. You develop blind spots when you're making a game, and you gotta let people take the blinders off.
Yeah, I'd say 100% that. On my end, probably coming from more of a project manager, product manager side, a lot of designers often spend years and years and just never really push their game out because they fear, like, I don't know, maybe feedback, maybe criticism. But I would say just bring it out there. I have a few friends that are like, they've been telling me for years that they have a game idea they want to show me, and they still haven't. And I was like, just show me. It's fine. Like, our first iterations of our game sucked.
It's never going to get better if you're not showing people.
Yeah, it's never going to get better if you don't go out there. And if you don't, if you're trying to do a pitching route, if you're not going around pitching and getting this feedback, even if you just get rejection after rejection, your game keeps getting better. And you're actually going to move forward in this project rather than spend 7 to 10 years on it and no one's ever seen it before.
No, I think those are great pieces of advice. Completely agree. And don't be afraid of rejection. I was recorded on a podcast today saying, I am a master of rejection. It has only made me better. So some thick skin is good if you're going the pitching direction. But regardless, definitely show your game. If you're self-publishing, 100%, still show your game.
And a related anecdote. A year ago, we signed a game that we had passed on a year before. So like, we were like, nope. And then a year later we saw it again and we're like, yeah, that's awesome, we're gonna sign it. So
yeah, it fixed all the issues over all the pitching sessions with other people.
Stick with it. Even pitch to the same publisher 12 months later, they might take it.
It works.
There you go, be a yo-yo. Just kidding.
Yeah. And I I can't speak for other publishers, but I could guess that a lot of publishers, sometimes when they say no, it's because your game is just not at the right time, right moment for what they're looking for. But a year later, like, they could be looking for something that they didn't have before, or the market's changed and they're like changing their strategy and want to go for a bigger game or a smaller game or a cat game or a non-cat game. So it's like, just because they said no once doesn't mean, as long as you keep that relationship going, it means that you could try it again later and see if it's just the right timing.
Yeah, I know that definitely has happened to me before, where I shelved a game for a while and then it came back out and everyone's like, oh my god, this is perfect. I was like, oh, okay, great. Done, sign it please.
Where were you guys last time?
Right, literally. So sometimes it's one of those things, like Emerson Masucci has never actually like discontinued working on a game. It's just like things will be shelved for a while or repurposed, but like no idea is ever thrown away, because, you know, timing, like anything in life, is a huge factor.
Yeah, one of my favorite designers and one of the favorite small games by him, he said he pitched 20 something publishers and got rejected by all of them until it finally got out, and I was like, this is one of my favorite games.
I was like, what is it, Confederacy of Dunces or whatever, one of the great American novels. That dude died before it got published.
I mean, that's kind of like any great American poet. I feel like you had to die first and then you became great, which is oh, am I ready to fall on that sword? Do I need to be great? I could be good.
I'm glad game designers don't have to do that.
Dude, same. I was like, I'm good being good.
Yeah.
Well, the nice, yeah, you can pitch your game in like, you know, whatever, 10 minutes to an hour or something. And a book takes a while to warm up to a good book, I think. Different thing. But yeah. Keep trying.
Well, awesome. As my closing question, I always ask, if you could have been the designer of a game that you didn't design, that's already been published, what game would you guys have chosen? You both can answer a different thing.
I can't believe I didn't think about this at all, even though I knew it was coming.
I warned you.
You did.
Still a hard question. I would probably go with my favorite game of all time.
Seems like a good place to start, which is...
Chaos in the Old World by Eric Lang. It is a game from 2008, I think. I don't know if it was the game that made him famous, but it's definitely one of his early games. It's based on the Warhammer IP, which is why there's no way they could reprint it again because they don't have the license anymore. They did kind of reprint it as Blood Rage, which is similar, but not as good.
Oh, hot take.
For me. But the reason why I like Chaos in the Old World is I love asymmetrical games. And it is an area control game, asymmetrical, and I've played it probably over 100 times now, and it's just so perfectly balanced. And yet all the different players are just completely different from each other. And it's just like, that's what made me fall in love with Eric Lang's games. It was like, wow, how did you balance this? And it definitely motivated me for like any game that I'm making or developing. I just want to make sure I could even come close to that kind of balance and just strive for that.
All right, great answer.
Your turn, Brendan.
I don't know. Gosh, this is hard.
Monopoly.
Monopoly, oh my God, because I'd be so rich, y'all.
Make that money.
Yeah, I'll take the
money.
Yeah,
I mean, do the money grab. Yeah. It's happened before on the show. Go for it.
Money grab. I mean, we could certainly use the funds. I'm not going to lie. But what would I say here? X-Wing, probably. First edition. Like the first couple of waves of X-Wing were just really tactically deep, asymmetric, balanced, simple. I just really enjoyed that the template flight thing. I think it came from a different game. So maybe, was it Wings of Glory, I think, did it first. And it got me where I am. It started my journey. You know, I had a few board games before I learned X-Wing, that first edition, but it changed my life. There you go.
I love that. There you go. It wasn't that hard.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate you both for being on the show, and thank you for everyone who's been listening to this episode of Game Design Unboxed, Inspiration to Publication, episode 105, Omicron Protocol. And thanks again, Bernie and Brandon. For anyone trying to find you guys, can you be found online for your company or individually?
Yes, for the company, deadalivegames.com. One long word, deadalivegames, and then .com.
There is no or in between.
Yeah, no or. Dead, alive, games. One word. Yeah.
It's easier to search for us now. The first few years, it was really hard.
There you go. Any social media that you want to plug or just the website?
We're pretty much at Dead Alive Games. We're mainly active on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, only when I'm at conventions because I'm really bad at video editing. And X, Threads, we're everywhere. But we're pretty much at Dead Alive Games everywhere.
And I'm your host, Danielle Reynolds, for everyone who's been listening. And you can find me on social media under like Instagram, X, Blue Sky, under Token Gamer, spelled G-A-Y-M-E-R. Thanks again. This was super fun.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you for joining Danielle for another episode of Game Design Unboxed, Inspiration to Publication. If you'd like to hear more great gaming podcasts, check out nodirectionpodcast.com. And if you're looking for a great board game, bag, playmat, or table, check out All Play at letsallplay.com. Join us next time.